Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Village Celebration. We appreciate you joining us today for this special edition. We are looking at police brutality in the Black community, and joining us is one of the leading voices for justice, a former police officer, Reddit Hudson, who is a national voice, has emerged in the past few years, speaking truth to power. Reddit, thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to join you, Vicki, and I hope everything is going well for you there. And your listeners as well.
We are a motivated group, and we particularly are interested in what your organization is doing. Now, the name is National Coalition of Law Enforcement Officers for Justice Reform and Accountability. Most recently, you wrote an open letter to Black officers.
Yes.
Tell me why.
Mm-hmm. Because of what's happening around us, what's been happening around us for years. I think, and my colleagues in the National Coalition believe, that we have a very important role to play in addressing the violence against the people in our communities that's been committed by police officers around the country and has a lot to do with race. And we think that from an empowered position, with our histories, with our backgrounds, with our awareness of law enforcement and what that work requires, we are an important voice in making change to a system that is institutionally racist at its core. That's the way that it was set up. That's the way that it functions. Just yesterday, mm-hmm. just to share an incident with you, mm-hmm. there was a police officer here, and it's been reported here in St. Louis, off-duty Black police officer, plain clothes. There was an incident in the city yesterday that involved a foot pursuit, and there were some police officers chasing a couple of suspects. Shots were fired. This off-duty Black officer hears the shots, comes outside to assist, but when the officers initially see him, he's ordered to the ground because he was in plain clothes. He had his badge mm-hmm. and everything, but I guess he either had it in his pocket, I don't know. But they order him to the ground. Two officers, at some point, they recognized him, and they told him to get up and start walking towards him. A third officer walks up and shoots him. After he was recognized by the two officers, the two white officers, and told by them that you can go ahead and get up and walk towards us because they knew who he was. And the third officer arriving shoots him, saying that he feared for his safety.
Are you serious? Who was this third officer? Did he not hear his colleagues? What went on with him?
As they allowed the individual to approach. But it's that kind of thing. In the Philando Castile case, if you've seen that,
absolutely.
Videotape, which is horrific. If you've seen the new videotape that was released just today by the ACLU, I think, of yet another Minnesota officer assaulting someone in a vehicle, those kinds of things have gone on forever, and they've gone unpunished. There's been no real accountability for them, and I think a lot of times it has to do with the law as it's written. It makes it very difficult to hold police officers accountable, but more importantly, it has to do with public perception that an officer's subjective experience outweighs everything. And if that person was, quote, in fear of their safety or in fear for their life, then that justifies everything. We know, former police officers and current police officers that I know that in many instances that has nothing to do with it, and mm-hmm. it's just an out that officers know is available to them to use to justify all kinds of human rights violations, civil rights violations, and violations of our civil liberties. So we think we have to get into that fight.
To the lay people like myself, when an officer says, I was afraid for my life, and the person they've shot was unarmed, it seems like mm-hmm. just something they say, an excuse for taking a life, and
right.
they're able to get away with it. I think that is the core of the outrage, that they're getting away with it. The Philando Castile tape
right.
you mentioned, they seemed to have a civil exchange, and all of a sudden, there was right. gunfire.
Philando Castile did everything right. He stopped his car. He advised the officer. Didn't try to surprise him, didn't try to spring anything on him. He knew that he had his 4-year-old child on the back seat. He knew that his fiance was sitting next to him. So he advised the officer, hey, man, I've got a firearm on me. Just so you know, I've got a permit to carry it.
Mm-hmm.
And the officer winds up shooting him. Seconds later, you're absolutely right. It's the fact that they get away with these kinds of things. And anybody who saw that tape, Vicki, what
yes.
strikes me beyond just the horrific nature of how his life was taken, was that they couldn't even get him convicted on reckless endangerment, let alone a manslaughter charge. He was exonerated on reckless endangerment, which was one of the charges that was included.
They walked scot-free.
It's a travesty, and it's wrong, and that's why I think that many law enforcement people have to get into this work and this advocacy to remake the system, because too many times someone like yourself, who is a competent professional, but you don't have police experience, and that would be the way that they would discount your take on the situation. Oh, Vicky, if you knew what our training involved and the kind of situations we face, you would never question, you know, anything that we do. Well, we do. We do know. We have had the training. We've been in situations. And here's a remarkable point for your listeners to consider, lest they think I'm exaggerating, which at this point I doubt any rational person could believe that. But in the history of the St. Louis Police Department, having black officers on the department, which is close to half a century now, I can't think of a single black officer that has ever shot at an unarmed white person, ever, in the history of the department. And I'm sure the same thing is true there in Pine Bluff, Little Rock, any city in Arkansas, any city in the country, any major city police department that has a significant number of black officers, I guarantee you, you'd be hard-pressed to find in their history, not just currently, but over the course of their history, a black officer that's shot at an unarmed white person.
Let's pull back the curtain. What is it like to work with men and women who are white, who carry guns as part of their jobs, and you know they don't value black life?
It's a challenge. And I think you know that you have a job to do, and you know that this is also your livelihood. So you're coming not just to protect and serve, but you're also coming to pay the bills, which I think in many cases is why you've seen a reluctance on the part of some officers to rock the boat or challenge the system, because they don't want to put that at risk. At the same time, there can be a level of, I don't want to say tension, but observance, detachment may be a better term, one from the other, this officer from that officer, knowing that your experience of this work is very different than mine. Your perception of the community we serve is very different than mine. We both have a job to do. Let's function as well as we can over the course of this shift and make it to the end of this shift without any BS from you. So, a lot of times officers pick up on what officers are committed to valuing the rights and the dignity of the people in that community, and they will behave differently around those officers. And they revert back to norm when they get around a crew that's ready to do business as usual.
When did you realize that this was a profession that didn't always treat the people who look like you with dignity?
Oh, I knew it. I knew it before I started. That was one of the reasons I joined. I hope to be a part of changing that culture and serving differently from an empowered position. And what I had seen over the years, I had some good examples before I started. You probably were not in St. Louis when some of the more prominent black leaders on that department first rose to prominence, but a guy named Charles Alphen. He was a captain when I knew him. Me and his son played baseball together. Him and my dad were both coaches of the team that we played on, but he's one of those guys who was just a great example of somebody in law enforcement who served the community and was conscious and who knew the people in the community and valued them and kind of brought that perspective to his work. And so, you know, that's something I wanted to emulate, especially as it would contrast with so much of what not only I had seen, but many of my friends had seen from police officers over the years growing up. So I just wanted to get into the work and do it differently.
When you were trained, and you've been out of the force for a number of years now, but then and now, is there specific training for dealing with those who are mentally ill, and I'm indirectly referencing the police shooting of Charlena Lyles in the Seattle
there
area.
Was not. There was not. When I was coming through, and it's desperately needed, obviously, the mental illness, I think, just from a layperson's perspective, not even with a law enforcement lens looking at it, but I think it's fairly pervasive at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I know that myself and the partner I used to work with, a guy named Tracy Cheney, we used to say, and we weren't professionals, we weren't medical professionals or anything, but just from the encounters that we would have in our district, we would say, man, I think mental illness is underdiagnosed in the city of St. Louis.
Mm.
And you can understand, I mean, people are constantly in stressful situations. There's so much deprivation and doing without and hopelessness and joblessness and money problems and everything else. People break down.
Absolutely.
So you encounter people like that from a position of authority, able to use force against people who may or may not be rational. Is desperately needed training in that area. I think people are starting to recognize that law enforcement needs a better way to respond to people who may be dealing with a mental history. But in her case, the young woman that you referenced,
Charlena Lyles, and they knew she was mentally ill.
I hate it because I've encountered any number of people who were holding knives when I was a police officer. I remember myself and a guy named Willie Thirdkill. Sergeant Thirdkill has passed now. But he was a sergeant at the time. I was a relatively new officer, and we got a call for a guy who was holding a knife in the department and threatening to do harm to himself and others, and he was mentally ill. We arrived. The guy was seated on the bed. He had a huge knife, a huge knife, like a butcher knife-sized knife, but it was two of us.
Mm-hmm.
We were on. We stood in the doorway while he sat on the bed, and we talked to him for about 20 minutes, and it was okay for us to talk to him for 20 minutes. Nothing needed to happen in 2 minutes or else.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
It didn't have to de-escalate, to give him
a
time
bunch of orders.
To kind
yeah,
of...
a bunch of orders given to a guy who's already at his lowest point.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to him, and we wound up getting the knife from him. He left the knife on the bed. We took him to Malcolm Bliss.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So for them to, and from what I understand, this woman isn't as big as 105 pounds.
Well, she was petite and
pregnant. You know,
pregnant.
So what, she's holding a knife.
And pregnant.
You know,
and had children.
Yeah,
there.
You know, yeah, I'm, that's the kind of thing. This is yet another example of why I think we need more voices from inside the law enforcement community to challenge decisions like that and actions like that on behalf of a person like that who probably didn't need to die.
So what's next for your group, and how can those who are listening help support your efforts?
We are still pulling at more officers to get involved in this work. There's a couple of officers I've got in mind now, one who I believe recently testified in Cleveland against a police officer who had shot someone without cause. And he was put on the stand and asked if he had ever been in fear of his life or if he thought it was necessary for the suspect to be shot. And in uniform, in court, he said no.
That took courage.
I was not in fear for my life, and no, he did not need to be shot. That's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one from about a year ago in Cincinnati. Some guy posted, he's a police officer there, who had posted on social media about ways for black people to protect themselves and not get killed by the police when they're encountered by them. We want to reach out to more officers and build kind of a critical mass to do more important work on behalf of the community that's been suffering for so long and add our voices to that. So I think the best thing people could do is just direct them to the NCLEOJ's Facebook page, and they can contact us there. We don't have a website up running. We had something for a minute. There was a problem with it. We'll probably put something back up here very soon. But that's a good way to get at us. And if there's any law enforcement people listening to this broadcast, please reach out to us. We're more than ready to receive you and allow you to help us do this work.
We really need your involvement and your leadership. What are your thoughts? And then I'm going to let you go because I know you have a busy schedule about meetings and workshops designed to teach African American youth and adults about interacting with the police?
Well, two thoughts. One, I just saw a story recently about New Jersey passing a law that requires all their school kids now to take a course on how to interact with police. I'm skeptical because of the point of view from which I don't, you know, that course may be taught.
Sure.
There are such things as Know Your Rights workshops, which I encourage the teaching of that information to children and adults alike. But I think more importantly, we need to be teaching these police officers a better way to interact and communicate with the people that they serve. And beyond that, still more importantly, we need to hold them accountable when they fail in any aspect of their work that has to do with our rights, our liberties, and our dignity, especially if it violates policy and training.
You know, the last time you were with us, you said, know your rights, but also know during that encounter when to let things go. You can always come back with an attorney in the heat of the moment.
Right. That's one of the things that I teach when I do Know Your Rights workshops, is that all of these things are your rights, and you do have to assert your rights in order to activate them. But if you sense or see that you are standing there with an officer who's a lunatic or who is intoxicated with his or her own power, then you don't need to press too much beyond their ability to manage themselves during the encounter. Just get out of there alive. And then, you know, we can deal with it later. We can check in with their superiors. We can check in with some attorneys. But, you know, if you recognize that things are escalating because you've asserted your rights, then shut it down, because on the street you can't win against the police.
Reddit Hudson, former police officer, national voice for the rights of African Americans with respect to police officers, and one of the leaders of the National Coalition of Law Enforcement Officers for Justice, Reform, and Accountability. We appreciate you joining us, and we're listening carefully. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vicki. I appreciate you and all the work that you've done here in St. Louis and now there in Arkansas. I hope they know what a treasure they have.
Well, thank you so much.
There.
And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Village Celebration.